Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it is about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater program 202. It's July 30th. It's a Sunday night. And to my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
We have Mike Estella here. Mikey, our executive producer, is here.
Hello.
Even though he's A-list, he's here.
I'm here.
Shantae Garth is our producer. She's in the booth. And we have Dan Jaffe and Dave Weiske from Oil Dry, the parent company of Cats Pride Kitty Litter. They've been our sponsor from day one, and we're going to talk to them in just a moment, and we're also going to give away a year's supply of Cats Pride Kitty Litter to some lucky WGN listener of our show, so stick around for that. Then, after that, we'll start things off with Murder at Midnight from 1947. Then, Tales of the Texas Rangers and the Hall of Ivy. The Halls of Ivy with Ronald and Benita Coleman. And it's all brought to you by our sponsor, Cats Pride. Dum, dum,
dum, dum, dum, dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cats Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film Game Night, about friends who meet for game nights and find themselves solving a murder mystery.
Okay. Mm. What do they win?
They are going to win two tickets to see Hair at the Mercury Theater Chicago.
Okay.
So excited to see
it. Number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress played Sacha Pfeiffer in Spotlight.
The numbers clearly indicate that there were senior clergy involved.
All right, who is that great actress? Call us, 312-981-7200. Win tickets to see Hair. We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back. This is show 202 of the WGN Radio Theater, playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
The numbers clearly indicate that there were senior clergy involved.
And Shantae took a caller offline. It looks like Margaret knew that the answer was Rachel McAdams. So Margaret's a winner, and she gets to see Hair. She got two tickets to the rock musical. It's playing now at the Mercury Theater.
The Age of Aquarius.
There you go.
I'm probably going to be the one singing that song, I think, because I've sung it so many times.
Yeah, they're going to ask you to hop up on there. It's playing through September 17th.
What do you think the odds of that?
Great music. I think I wouldn't place any $50 bets on it.
No, I wouldn't either.
You know, some people like to bet. I don't know. Great music. A Mercury Theater does great stuff. I will be there Thursday night for opening. If you happen to be there, make sure to find me and say hi. I would love to say hi. And I look forward to seeing the show as well. So congratulations to Margaret. For more information and tickets, go to mercurytheaterchicago.com.
All right. Well, we have our two special guests in the studio. We have Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Oil Dry, and the parent company of Cats Pride Kitty Litter, our sponsor from day one here, which is 2.5 years they've been our sponsor. And I can't thank Dan enough. And also Dave Weiske, who is the Vice President of Customer Success. Both are here again. Hey, guys, how are you? Good seeing you both.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Doing well. Congratulations on your 200 mark. You're at 202 now.
202.
That's awesome.
202 shows Lisa's put up with me.
It's a lot of Sundays for sure.
Yeah.
It's a lot of Carl time.
It's a lot of Lisa time. Hey, Dan, I know you want to say hi to Bud Selig because he's a good friend of yours. And tell everybody about what happened to him today. And where were you, sir?
Well, I was up in Cooperstown, New York, right near the Marcy Distribution Center of Walmart. And Bud Selig, it was his 83rd birthday today, and he is the first and only Hall of Fame member to be inducted on his actual birthday.
Wow.
So he is now in the Cooperstown Hall of Fame.
And you flew out there to see that. That's really great. You've known Bud a long time, I guess, right?
I actually named my son after him. So my son,
wow,
Buddy, is named after Bud Selig.
Wow, very cool. All right, well, that's great, and congrats to Bud Selig. And who else did they induct today?
He had Pudge Rodriguez.
Pudge, yeah.
Jeff Bagwell, who gave a great speech.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Tim Raines, and then John Schuerholz.
Oh, wow.
The general manager of the Braves. 13 consecutive divisional titles, which is pretty amazing.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Never been to Cooperstown. I'd love to check that out sometime. And, you know, team or somebody that wasn't a baseball player that was inducted into the Hall of Fame? Do you know the answer to that one? Not a player.
I do.
All right, Dan?
Who's on first?
That's
Abbott,
right.
And Costello.
Abbott and Costello. He got it. Dan Jaffe got it. That tells me he's a classic radio fan,
he knows it.
Which we know you are a classic radio fan.
You know I am. And Dave was going to bet me $50 that I didn't know it.
That would not have been good. That would cost you $100 today. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Cat's Pride and why. You know, here's the thing, folks. You would be doing me a great favor if you're a fan of this show and you own a cat. We would love you to switch to Cat's Pride Kitty Litter if you are not already using Cat's Pride. And there's a lot of reasons why. I'm going to let Dan kind of give you a laundry list of why you should switch over to Cat's Pride Kitty Litter if you haven't already.
I'm going to give you the number one reason. We have the highest repeat rate of any cat litter because our quality is so good. The product clumps hard, controls odors, low dust, lightweight. And really, our biggest problem is awareness. People just don't know we're out there. We get crowded off the shelves. Everyone knows the guy's in yellow. So we're the ones in green, where we always say, look for the green jug. But I really guarantee you, if you try it, you will love it. And that is proven by our repeat rate.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other reasons, including all the great work you do to save cats and dogs all across this world. With your product, because you give a portion of the sales to the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation. Tell us a little bit about that, Dave.
Sure. So Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, this is, again, Catherine Heigl's brother. This was a sad tragedy. He lost his life at the age of 15, and he was a big animal lover. So they ended up really starting a foundation to give money towards, really a good effort of really reducing the whole organization behind reducing, you know, this incredible cruelty to animals. And as big as a lover that he was, they continued this effort on. And now Oil Dry, Cat's Pride, and Fresh and Light Ultimate Care, we're giving a portion of every single purchase towards that foundation, which is doing a great thing for really the animal cruelty of what's going on in her family.
That's fantastic. And that's been going on like a couple of years now, right, Dan? And it's been doing very well. So everyone, if you do switch over to Cat's Pride Kitty Litter, not only are you going to get the best product and the lightest weight product, we'll talk about lightweight in a second here, but also you're going to help save lives of cats and dogs all across the world.
Yeah, the foundation is his legacy for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 3 million cats enter shelters a year, and only 1.8 million get adopted.
Okay.
So do the math. 1.2 million cats are needlessly being euthanized every year.
Wow, wow. And the lightweight is another great feature of Cat's Pride, Fresh and Light. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, we've known forever that consumers use the product by volume. They fill to 2.5 or 3 inches or whatever depth they want, yet the product is sold by weight. So what we figured out was if we can deliver all the volume but reduce the weight, it would be very analogous to what went on in liquid detergent, where they concentrated it but still delivered the loads. So we put on our package how many days and how many clumps you're going to get with each package so that you can make that load comparison for yourself. And what we deliver is equal to or greater the days and clumps with half the weight. So, for instance, if you're used to buying a 20-pound jug of the other guy, you can buy a 10-pound jug of ours and get all the efficacy, all the use, but bring home half the weight. Now, it doesn't just help you. It allows us to put twice as many units on a truckload, which then cuts the carbon footprint pretty much in half, which is very powerful to the United States.
So it's a green product that you put out. And, Dave just was saying he got a cortisone shot in his shoulder. You won't need a cortisone shot carrying Cat's Pride Fresh and Light because it's half the weight of other kitty litters, too. So that's really great because you're carrying it from the store to your car and then from your car to your home, of course, unless you're buying it online. And Dave's going to tell us where you can get Cat's Pride Fresh and Light.
Yeah, so for right now, there's a little bit of a secret going on. If you go out to your Walmart, you're going to be able to find an extremely great bargain. But you got to look closely. So we're going to tease the audience. Go to Walmart. Go out there and try to go and look for the green jug. There'll be a surprise there for you. As well as Albertsons, we talk about locally here in the Chicagoland area. You have, you've got Jewel, Mariano's, and, you know, you can find this litter online, too. So if you can't get out of the house, go to Amazon, Chewy.com, Walmart.com, and you'll be able to purchase accordingly right there.
Fantastic. And, you know, another thing that Dan and Dave do every single month, they come in here at WGN as our sponsor of the WGN Radio Theater, and they do something really generous. They give away to one of our listeners a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, which is a very valuable gift, and we appreciate you doing that, and we're going to do it right now. So people have sent in their pictures of their cat this month. We've got a lot of entries, and we're going to do a random drawing right now, and who's going to pick it? Dan? All right, Dan's going to pick. Are we ready? We have drum roll, please.
Okay. Erin Gidley and her daughter Riley have won because their cat Robin is now going to get a year's supply of Cat's Pride Fresh and Light Ultimate Care. They are from Naperville, Illinois.
Yay.
Very good. All right, Naperville listener, congratulations. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Dave. Is there anything else you want to say to the listeners?
No, just thank you very much. And the reason we love giving away the product is we know that once they use it, the Gidleys will become loyal users of Ultimate Care, and we hope you'll even tell your friends.
That's right. And, folks, switch over to Fresh and Light Cat's Pride. We really appreciate if you would. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Dave. We appreciate you very much. Thanks for sponsoring our show. And ready for a good murder mystery on Murder at Midnight? Oh, I know Dan likes the mysteries. He loves suspense. Dave, you like the suspenseful shows. Well, we have an episode of Murder at Midnight now. Let's go back to June 13th, 1947. This is called The House Where Death Lived. Here is part one of Murder at Midnight.
Murder at Midnight.
It's not just an ordinary cane, my dear.
Alec.
It's a sword cane. See? Calhoun used it when he killed his wife, right where you're standing.
Alec, you kill Sanders.
Exactly.
And now you're going to kill me.
Yes.
No, no, no. Keep away from me.
I'm sorry.
Keep away. Help.
My dear.
Midnight. The witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in The House Where Death Lived.
And now, Murder at Midnight. Tales of mystery and terror by radio's masters of the macabre. Our story is a ghostly nightmare by one of radio's best-known mystery writers, Robert Newman. Its title, The House Where Death Lived.
A large rambling house on top of a hill. A house whose windows are either shuttered or broken. A rusty iron fence surrounds it, and its grounds are waste and uncared for. A car grinds slowly up the hill, stops before the main gate, and two men get out. One of them is gray-haired but vigorous. The other wears a chauffeur's uniform. They push open the heavy gate. Start up the gravel path.
Quite a joint.
You could hardly expect it to be a show place after being empty for more than 10 years.
It's open.
Yes. Well, I'm glad we didn't have to force it. All right, Sanders. You can go back to the car and wait for me. I should be out in about a half an hour or so.
You mean you're going in alone?
Why, yes.
Somehow I don't think you're exactly suited by temperament for psychic research.
Okay, Doc, I'll be waiting for you back in the car.
Right. Now, let's see. I suppose the best place to start would be...
Good evening.
What? Oh, I'm awfully sorry. I hope I haven't made a mistake. This is the Calhoun house, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
This is very embarrassing. I was down to see the trustees just this morning. They gave me permission to go through the place and told me that there was no one living here, that no one had lived here for many years.
As you can see, that's not quite true. Not that it matters. I lead a rather lonely life, and I'm very glad you came. I'd be more than happy to show you around.
Well, you're very kind. My name is Goff, Dr. Alexander Goff.
Dr. Goff.
For the past few years, I've been specializing in psychic research.
Oh, yes.
You've heard of me?
I'm sorry, no. But I do know that scientists, specialists in psychical research, have been interested in the house for many years. There have been several books written about it.
I read about it in the series of studies that Kinsey did. He said it was one of the most fertile fields for manifestations he'd ever come across. It has a long history of apparitions and hauntings.
That's very true. And now, would you like to look around?
I'd like that very much.
Very well. I imagine the best place to begin is with the cellar. This way.
The cellar. That's where Mrs. Calhoun was killed, wasn't it?
Yes. I keep the door locked now for that and for several other reasons.
May I?
No, wait. Wait, don't try to go down. Have you a match?
Why, yes.
There aren't any stairs.
Exactly. That's how Mrs. Calhoun was killed. The stairs had become rotten and Calhoun took them out. Put in that ladder. Mrs. Calhoun didn't know it. She tried to go down, fell, and broke her neck.
But she wasn't just killed. She was murdered, wasn't she?
Well, that's hard to say. I don't think even Calhoun could tell you whether it was deliberate or not. For a long time, people didn't even suspect what had happened. They thought that she'd run away, disappeared. However, after she was killed, Calhoun buried her down there in the cellar. You see, over there, near that big flagstone.
Oh, I see. Well, after that, there was something about a gardener, wasn't there?
Yes, Burroughs. He had helped Calhoun take out the stairs. Considerably later, he was working in the cellar and found some bones, and he put two and two together
and went to the police.
No, he did a lot better than that, from his own point of view. Shall we go back into the parlor?
Oh, yes, of course.
I'll just shut this door again. Yeah. Burroughs began blackmailing Calhoun. Calhoun paid for a while, and then one day he called Burroughs in here, into the parlor. He was sitting over there at that desk. He had his cane with him. The cane that's on the desk there now. You can look at it if you like.
Well, thank you. I would like to look at it.
Twist the handle and pull on it.
A sword cane?
Yes. He killed Burroughs right here in this room. That stain on the carpet, there is his blood. This time he didn't even try to get away with it. He called in the police and he was tried and sent to an institution.
Yes, but that's what I don't understand. If Calhoun had committed two murders, why wasn't he sent to jail or hanged?
Because no one knew whether he was sane or not. As a matter of fact, I don't think Calhoun knew himself. You see, when they asked him why he had killed his wife and Burroughs, he said he had to, that he'd been told to.
Told to? By whom?
Well, he wasn't sure. By voices. He said they told him that they lived here in this house before him, that they had killed, and that he would have to kill too.
Excellent. Just what I've been looking for and what I've hoped for. A house with a tradition of hauntings, where each generation is affected by that tradition and adds to it. What's the matter?
They've come for me. They're weighing me down, dragging
what?
Me back.
They? Who? Oh, you're ill. Here, let me help you.
No, it's no use. You can't pick me up. It's too much on my hands. On my head.
I'm going to venture to guess that's an organ right there, Lisa.
That is an organ.
Yeah.
You've got it.
Murder at Midnight.
Which organ?
I don't know. I think it's like a pipe organ of some sort, right?
I'm guessing
1947.
Tell you.
Right. The House Where Death Lived, starring Barry Kroger. Ooh, creepy episode. All right, that's the first portion of it. We'll have more after these words. All right, make sure you watch that on CLTV. I think we need a show on CLTV, Lisa.
I think we need a lot of things. We could.
Well, you have a new gig in Warsaw, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Right? Did you hear about that, Mike? Did you know that Lisa has a, you know, the Listen to Lisa radio show that we're going to do, a call-in show?
I've decided I needed
this.
A new agent.
And I got her a gig. It's 4 in the morning. It's a 30-minute gig, Tuesday nights, Wednesday mornings in Warsaw, New Jersey. No pay, but she does have a parking space.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
And
so,
you got to start somewhere.
I'm thinking Carl may not be the best person to be my agent.
Well.
Right? So I'm going to continue looking onward.
Listen, she said to get her a gig. I got her a gig.
Sometimes you got to throw some back in the sea.
It's a 10-watt radio station, non-commercial. But, you know, and they don't stream. I checked. You asked me if they stream. They don't stream. They don't have that technology.
Right.
They have a Radio Shack mixer. They said they have a Radio Shack mixer and a Radio Shack microphone.
Radio Shack is a great store.
I know. So I started out with Radio Shack cassette players and stuff.
Me too.
Radio Shack makes good stuff. And it was a Shure microphone. They have a Shure. So you're going
to
be
good. I'm
good
to go.
Yeah, no engineer. You have to work your own board and everything like that.
Oh, that's a problem. that's a big problem.
You have to work. But you have your own parking space.
I'm a little spoiled with Shantae over here.
I think what will happen is you'll do the show. It's a half hour. It's kind of late at night, early in the morning. You'll do the show, and within 6, 10, 12 years or so, you'll win an award, some radio, like a Marconi award. And then you'll get on another station.
Well, I've already declined the generous offer, and I'm continuing to look for something that fits my needs.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You mean it's open?
It's open, Roger.
Roger's going to take it.
Roger. But you have to still call Listen to Lisa. Yeah. That's the title,
that's
no matter what. So
you can do it.
You could be me. You could
be
a better version of me, Roger.
No, that's a great idea. You know, listen, you know, they don't knock on the door too often in this business.
I know.
And if you've got to knock on the door like that.
Knock three times.
Hello, Lisa.
On the ceiling.
Hello, hello. All right.
If you want me.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger, and thanks, Esmeralda. Hey, real quick, before we get back into Murder at Midnight, I want to remind all of our listeners, we are going to give away some more Twilight Zone CD sets in this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. If you can guess Lisa's favorite song from 1970 and my favorite song from 1970... And we'll reveal Lisa and my song a little later in the show. But you can text in to 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You have to say what song you think Lisa's is and mine. You have to identify Carl's song or Lisa's song.
And you only have to get one of them right. You don't have to get them both right. If you get either of us right, you will win a Twilight Zone 4 CD set. And the only hint that I gave on Facebook was go for the unexpected.
Yeah, 1970.
So, I know there's a lot of great songs from the 70s. Give it a shot. Text us.
Yeah, but it's
in.
Not the 70s. It's 1970.
I'm just saying there were a lot of great songs.
Yes. Okay.
But this one is 1970. Yeah,
absolutely right. All right, let's get back now to Murder at Midnight.
Where is he?
He's there, right there on the floor. I tried to pick him up and put him on the couch, but I couldn't lift him. Now he's gone.
Well, now look, Doc, if he fell down, if he was as weak as you said it... Hey, wait a minute. Hey, what did he look like?
Well, he was quite old, about 70, and very tall and thin. He had white hair and a white goatee.
Holy smokes.
What's the matter?
Well, I was waiting outside for you. The guy that lives just down the hill came by, and we kind of talked a little.
Yes?
I told him you were inside here, and you described Calhoun to me, the guy that used to live here. And the old gent you say you spoke to sounds just like him.
But it couldn't have been Calhoun is still in an institution.
No, he's not. At least not exactly. That's how this guy happened to talk about it. You see, he just read in the paper that Calhoun had died yesterday.
Sanders.
Yeah?
That was Calhoun's ghost.
Oh, now, look,
it was, I tell you. It has to be. This is what I've been looking for years. An apparition that manifests itself without a medium or any apparatus. It's exactly what I need for the last chapter of my book. And I'm going to stay here until he appears again.
Calhoun? Calhoun? Where are you? Why don't you come back? I'm waiting for you.
Oh, it's no use. 2 days now and not a sign of him. Maybe Sanders was right. Maybe I did imagine the whole thing. Either that... Wait a minute. He didn't die here. He died at the asylum. He'd lived here all his life, committed 2 murders here. Perhaps the aura, the forces here, was strong enough to evoke him once, but not to bring him back again. His wife and the gardener, they did die here. If I could establish contact, I might be able to evoke them. Or else if someone else died here, someone I knew and someone that knew me.
Calhoun? Is that right? Is that what I have to do? What? Who's there?
Me, Doc. Hand it.
Oh. Just a second.
Oh, what a night. It's blowing like all get out.
What do you want, Sanders?
Well, the missus thought you should get a little worried about you. Thought you might be running low on food.
Oh, no. I still have plenty. I haven't been eating much.
Any luck?
No, he hasn't materialized again, but... I'm sure he will. I know he will.
If someone else died here.
Huh?
Someone you knew. And someone that knew you.
Yes.
What's the matter, Doc? Hey, why are you staring at me that way? Doc!
Hmm? I'm sorry, Sanders. Sanders, I was just thinking that if you stayed here with me, it might help.
But I thought you said I was all wrong for this kind of stuff. You know I don't believe in ghosts, anything like that.
Well, I did say that, Sanders, but... Oh, this place is different. This is such a powerful, fertile field for psychic manifestations that I think if you did stay, we could cure your skepticism permanently.
Yeah? How?
Well, this is such a perfect night for an evocation.
I don't hear anything. Just a storm.
Listen hard. There it is again. It's down in the cellar.
Where's that?
It's back there.
Where?
Go ahead, run. You're quicker than I am, Sanders. Run, hurry.
Okay, but I still don't hear anything.
A man with an obsession in a haunted house. A man with a corpse on his hands as the clock strikes 12 for...
Murder at midnight.
Just a moment later, Dr. Goff is still standing by the open cellar door. Lighting a candle, he peers down to where Sanders' body lies huddled on the flagstones below.
Sanders? Sanders? Sure. What's this? Ladder. Holmes. Well, now, let's see. He's dead, all right. Very dead. Neck broken in 2 places. I'm sorry, Sanders. Very sorry. But science is a hard mistress. I've been working on my book for 7 years. This is the first chance I've had to make detailed and objective observations on a specific set of phenomena. When Calhoun didn't materialize again... I'm sure you understand. The only problem now is the police. They're apt to be very uncompromising about something like this. There were only some way that I could... I know. The car. It's quite late, and with the storm blowing, there's not likely to be anyone around. Yeah. Oh, come on, Sanders. You and I are going to take a little trip. Now, we're almost there, Sanders. Just a little farther. Here we are. Now, let's see. Well, you turned the car around before you came in, so it's headed downhill. That's splendid. Very considerate. Now, open the door and put you in. Oh, up. Just make sure you don't fall sideways. So you stay behind the wheel. Yeah, that's it. Oh, is there anything else? Anything I've forgotten? I don't think so. Yeah. Just take the brake off. And shut the door. And wait. There's no telling how far she'll go. Especially with the street so bumpy. I only hope that she'll go far enough to pick up plenty of speed. So that when she... does. She's swinging. Swinging to the right. Yeah. And now I wait. Sanders! Sanders! Where are you? It's been 4 or 5 days now. Why haven't you come back? Haven't you wanted to? Or haven't you been able to find a way? This is where you died, remember? Or down here in the cellar. Are you down there? Sanders? Are you down there? No. Not down there. Not anywhere. What's that? Yes? Well, who's that? Who's there?
It's me.
What do you want, Jean?
I want to talk at the Indian.
Just a second.
Alec. Oh, I'm so glad to see you, dear.
I asked you, what do you want? Why did you come here?
Why? It's been almost a week now since you've been home. Have you any idea how worried I've been? You didn't even phone me after Sanders was killed.
I'm sorry. I just never thought of phoning you. I had other things on my mind.
How did it happen, Alec?
You read the verdict of the inquest. You probably fell asleep at the wheel waiting for me. The brakes slipped, the car rolled down the hill, and... crash.
Poor Sanders. Somehow I can't help feeling...
Feeling what?
I don't know. Perhaps it's this horrible old house. Everything about it is just plain evil. Oh, Alec, why don't you give it all up?
Give what up?
This obsession of yours. You started writing a book, doing psychical research to prove that there were no such things as apparitions or ghosts.
Suppose I found out that I was wrong.
What?
Yes, what would you say if I told you that I'd already seen one apparition here and that I was expecting to see another one?
Alec. Oh, no.
Oh, yes, Jean. The first evening I came here, I saw Calhoun. I talked to him. He showed me around the house. And later on, I discovered that he had died the day before. I waited for him to come back again, but he never did. And I finally realized why. He couldn't come back because he hadn't died here. He died at the sanitarium. But now, I'm waiting for Sanders to come back.
Sanders? But he didn't die here either. He died?
Yes, Jean.
I don't like it here, Alec. I'm afraid. I'm going.
No, Jean. Don't go. You can help me.
Huh?
Come on in here. Into the parlor.
But But, Alec...
Come on, Jean. Later I'll tell you a very interesting story about this room, about something that happened here a long time ago.
But I... All right, Alec.
That's a good girl. You know, Jean, I just realized I've been very stupid. Calhoun couldn't come back again because he didn't die here. Sanders did die here, but he wasn't buried here. And now I'm beginning to think that a spirit can only materialize in the place where its body is.
But what's that got to do with me?
Dear, does anyone know that you came here tonight?
Why, no, but...
Good.
What do you mean? And what are you doing with that cane?
Remember I said I was going to tell you a story about something that had happened here in this room? Well, this cane played an important part in it. You see, it's not just an ordinary cane. This is a sword cane. It's what Calhoun used when he killed his wife, right where you're standing.
Alec, you killed Sanders.
Exactly.
And now you're going to kill me.
Yes, dear. I am going to kill you. And I'm going to bury you right here, down in the cellar where Calhoun buried his wife. Then at least you will be able to come back. No, don't try and run away. It won't do any good. You see, I locked the door.
No. Keep away from me.
I'm sorry.
Keep away.
My
help!
Dear.
Help!
Now, smooth up the gravel a little. Well, there. That ought to do it.
Very nice, Doctor. Very nice indeed. You didn't do quite as neat a job as I did, but you did.
Calhoun.
Yes, Doctor.
You're dead. But you did come back.
Yes, I came back to tell you how grateful I am to you.
Grateful? For what?
For having, shall we say, relieved me. You see, there's a curse on this house. When I was alive and lived here, even before I killed my wife and Burroughs, I saw the ghosts of those who had died before I was born. It was they who made me kill, because once I did kill, they were free.
I don't understand.
Don't you? As long as this house stands, someone must haunt it. Until I died, it was haunted by those whom I had killed. When I died, it became my job. I thought it'd be years before I could find someone to take my place, and then you came along.
You mean...
Yes, Doctor, yes, the curse, the evil that was spawned here has been passed on to you. Now it's haunted by those whom you killed, and I am free and can rest in peace. But you must stay here and live with the evil you created until you die.
No, I won't stay.
Yes, you will, Doctor. Oh, I didn't believe it either. I thought I could leave whenever I wanted to. But I found that I couldn't. I had to stay until they took me away. When you try to leave, you'll find out why.
But I won't stay. I tell you, I won't. Neither you nor they can make me stay. Nothing can make me stay.
No.
What's more, you're right about this place. It is evil. But I'm not going to let that evil continue. It must be destroyed, along with every stick and stone in this house.
And just how do you propose to do that?
I'll show you. With fire, this can of kerosene, pile of lumber there.
It won't do any good, take my word for it.
No, you watch. There! The whole cellar, the whole house will go now.
Yes, Doctor, but you won't go.
I won't. You watch me.
But you can't go without me, Doc.
What?
Don't you remember? You carried me out to the car. You've got to take me with you.
Sanders.
Yes, Doctor, your chauffeur.
Let go of me, Sanders. Let go. I can't take you with me.
And you've got to take me too, Alec.
No. Let go. Both of you.
Now you know why I couldn't go either.
Let go.
What dragged me back and weighed me down.
Please.
Now you know why you're going to have to stay here.
I won't stay. I tell you, I won't. Not even if I have to take both Sanders and Jean with me.
I'm afraid that won't do any good, Doctor. You see, the ladder isn't very strong.
No! Oh. It broke. I'm
trapped here.
Goodbye, Doctor. If you don't mind, I'll leave you now for good.
No!
Flames roar higher and higher as Dr. Goff screams and staggers backward. Far away, a bell starts tolling for
murder at midnight.
Remember to be with us again when death stretches out his bony hand and the clocks strike 12 for
murder at midnight.
The part of Dr. Goff was played by Barry Kroger. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leder.
All right, there's a good murder mystery on Murder at Midnight from June 13th, 1947. The House Where Death Lived. Starring Barry Kroger. That's a good series, huh, Lisa? Huh, Lisa Wolf?
Mm-hmm.
She's eating an apple. She can't talk right now. You know, you should time it. So
I'm good.
You should time it so you're not chewing.
I'm not
when
chewing.
The shows are over.
I'm not.
You have like 30 minutes to eat while the shows are on.
I'm good.
All right. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. I love Nick DiGilio's show. I love his program. And he comes on right after us this morning, Lisa.
Yeah, he'll be in the studio.
2 a.m.
Talking about what's up for the
show
tonight.
Yeah, we'll
chat
with Nick right at the end of our show. We generally do. And then you'll hear Nick all the way to 5 a.m. right here on the greatest radio station on the planet, WGN. Do you ever think we'd end up here, Lisa, have a show on the greatest radio station? I mean, I know you have offers from Warsaw, New Jersey, 10-watt
right.
station, but we are on a 50,000-watt station that reaches 40-plus states at night. 40-plus states were heard, and then parts of Canada as well, and then, of course, streamed all over the world.
Right. You can listen to it on a computer anywhere.
You can watch us, too.
Oh, right.
On WGN. That's... You go to WGNradio.com
there
and click watch. I
right.
learned.
Watch live.
I listened
yeah.
to the podcast, yesterday's yep. podcast, and you talked about it, and then I sort of put it into long-term memory, which will last about 2 days.
Maybe you should try that sometime, see how that works out.
Yeah. Hey, you know what, Lisa?
What?
We have we've chosen two songs, your favorite song and my favorite song from 1970. People have been texting in like crazy. We love it. 1970, great year for music. Lisa has a song, I have a song, and if you want to take a shot, text us what you think our songs are. 312-981-7200. Make sure that you say, this is what I think Carl's song is, this is what I think Lisa's song is. And if you get it right, for everybody that gets it right, I'm going to go to the post office.
Personally?
Yeah, I do it because I don't have any assistants. Like, she's got like 15 assistants. I don't have anybody.
Don't forget the stamps.
Yeah, no, I do it right at the post office there.
Oh, okay.
And I will send you a 4-CD set of The Twilight Zone. Really
Ooh.
Nice. Yeah.
And just
fun.
So you know, really quickly, I'm not going to text you back until we divulge our answers. So
yeah.
I can't say right or wrong until it's over. So when are we going to let everybody
we'll
know?
We'll probably let everybody
hour?
Know in the next hour. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got about another 45 minutes or so to get your texts in. Whose
so
favorite
keep trying,
song?
You guys.
And you know what? Next time we do this, let's include Roger and
yeah.
Esmeralda's songs.
That would
they,
be great.
They, Esmeralda wasn't born in 1970 yet, so we can't. She wouldn't work. It wouldn't work for Esmeralda.
Maybe it would.
But maybe
she could
you
appreciate
know, she was
music.
Born
she could have had a favorite song from back
yeah.
then, even now.
I'm going to guess Esmeralda was born about 1994. It's about right. Yeah, it's about right. Lisa, 1920 what?
Two.
1922. All right, so that we'll do that. The next time we do this will be 1971. So Esmeralda, think about your song, and Roger, think about your song. But right now it's 1970.
I have a song in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, keep it right there.
A song in my heart.
Just keep it in your heart.
Oh, okay.
We'll just leave it right where it is.
In our next hour, we're going to tune into Tales of the Texas Rangers, a good sort of modern Western detective series starring Joel McRae. And then in our third hour, it's The Halls of Ivy, good comedy with Ronald and Benita Coleman from 1950. That's still coming your way. Plus, we'll give away some Twilight Zone CDs. And we'll give away tickets to see Hair. Got a lot going on right here on the greatest radio station on the planet, as we said. And hopefully one of your favorite radio shows, the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. Welcome to Hour 2 of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. And, Lisa, we have two songs, well, your song from 1970 and my song from 1970. We will reveal what those songs are in this hour. And, folks, you still have a chance to text in at 312-981-7200 what you think our songs are. Make sure you identify Carl's song, Lisa's song, and if you get it right, you're going to win some Twilight Zone CDs. In this hour, it's... a great episode of Tales of the Texas Rangers, a good detective Western adventure, and it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Dum, 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 dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming science fiction thriller, Captive State, which takes place 10 years after a Chicago neighborhood is taken over by an extraterrestrial force.
Mm.
Interesting,
wow.
Right?
Is that one of your from the other planet?
Yeah.
Brought him
one
here.
One of my friends.
Brought him
over.
Here in your spaceship.
That's right.
All right.
And the winner gets two tickets to see Hair, which is now playing at the Mercury Theater. It's running through September 17th. Great show. I will be there this week.
All right. If you have any idea who this is, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Bill Randa in Kong Skull Island.
What happens when they show up on your doorstep?
All right. What happens, Lisa, when they show up on your doorstep?
Trouble.
All right, 312-981-7200. Give us a call. Tell us who that actor is and win some tickets to Hair. We'll be right back.
All righty, we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play that movie clip one more time.
What happens when they show up on your doorstep?
And we've got Robert on the line. Hey, how are you?
Doing good, thank you.
Great. So what happens when they show up on your doorstep?
Well, I guess it's John Goodman.
It's John Goodman is exactly right. You are a winner, Robert. You have won a pair of tickets to see Hair. It's a rock musical now playing at the Mercury Theater. It's running through September 17th. I'm sure you've seen the show or heard of it. It's got great music. It's a great theater, and I'm sure you will love it. And you can check it out. For more information, go to mercurytheaterchicago.com.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks,
Thank
Robert.
You.
Okay, it is time now for Tales of the Texas Rangers episode. This was a sort of a modern Western, Lisa. It was, you know, a lot of Westerns were set back in the 1800s. This was set in present day. So that means like 1945, 1946 in there. And like its predecessor, Dragnet, Tales of the Texas Rangers adapted actual police case files from the Texas Ranger filing cabinets. Now, Texas Ranger Jace Pearson was portrayed by Joel McRae, and they used the latest scientific techniques to identify criminals, including DNA. They were starting to, you know, understand the uses of DNA to solve crimes back then. So some of the shows had that. It was produced and directed by Stacy Keach Sr., you know, the actor Stacy Keach, our pal, who's the host of the Twilight Zone radio dramas,
yes,
his dad produced
the
show. Ran from 1950 to 1952, had top supporting players, and I think you'll like this a lot. Let's go back to a broadcast date now of September 9th, 1950. This is called Dead or Alive, Joel McRae in part one of Tales of the Texas Rangers.
Presenting Joel McRae as Jace Pearson in Tales of the Texas Rangers. Tales of the Texas Rangers, authentic stories from their official files. Texas, more than 260,000 square miles, and 50 men who make up the most famous and oldest law enforcement body in North America. Now, from the files of the Texas Rangers come these stories based on fact. Only names, dates, and places are fictitious for obvious reasons. The events themselves are a matter of record. Tonight's transcribed case, Dead or Alive.
At exactly 9:13 a.m. on Wednesday, April 16, 1947, the French freighter Grand Camp, carrying a highly explosive cargo of ammonium nitrate fertilizer, blew up in the harbor at Texas City, Texas. It was the first in a chain of explosions as chemical plants, tin smelters, and oil refineries disappeared in blasts and flame. Shortly after 1 a.m. the next morning, the major chain reaction was set off. The explosions rocking the city of Galveston, 10 miles across the bay, where excited crowds gathered in the streets watching the raging, flame-pierced sky.
X-ray, X-ray, Texas City death toll, 300, hundreds more missing, scores of bodies unidentified. Paper, mister?
Yeah, give me one. Here.
Read about it, unidentified dead toll, still
bodies. Where are the names, Vance? Where's the list of the dead?
Well, they only got a few of them identified.
Well, is Ralph's name there?
Wait a minute. No, he's probably all right. Oh. A working square like him would be.
But he worked at one of the refineries they're burning.
Stop blubbering. Want to attract attention to me?
No, Vance, no. But he is my brother. I got to worry about him, too, don't I?
Yeah. Come on, over here into this doorway. Look at that blaze over there across the bay. What a spot to clean up. Money, jewelry must be laying around the streets. Just
Vance,
wait.
Vance, you're crazy. There'll be police there, rangers. You're in enough trouble now.
Yeah. Yeah, Lil, you're right. But I'm getting out of it now for good. And that place over there is going to do it. Maybe your brother Ralph is one of the dead they haven't identified.
Vance.
You got to go there, baby. If he is, you'll have to identify him.
Oh.
If he is there, in with the ones they don't know. There's nothing you can do to help him. But you can help me.
Vance, what do you mean?
Well, if you find him there, baby, you can identify the body and say it's mine.
Vance.
You want me in the clear, don't you, baby? They won't be chasing after me if they think I'm dead, don't you see?
But my own brother, what are you asking me to do?
I'm asking you to do as you're told. If you want to walk out on me, go ahead. But if you don't, you're going to want me to keep on running for the rest of my life? Well, let them get me and send me to Huntsville for 10 to 20?
Oh, I don't want anything to happen to you, Vance. You know that.
Well, then show me, baby. Show me. You can't help Ralph if he's over there, but you can't help me, don't you see? I'll get out of here tonight. And I'll let you know when to meet me. Maybe at that resort place we passed near Lake Bluewater. It'll be free, baby. You and me. Free from there on.
But how? What'll we do for money?
That'll be taken care of, too. There's a safe in Lansdowne. I've been itching to get at it for a long time. One last box job, baby, and enough to see us through. Now, go ahead right now. And remember, if you find your brother, he ain't Ralph Brenner. He's me, Vance Young. And come back, pack up, and stay put till you hear from me. From then on, it's gravy. Nobody ever arrests a dead man.
By Friday morning, April 18th, more than 200 bodies, many still unidentified, were laid out in the Texas City High School gymnasium. Texas Rangers, including Ranger Jace Pearson, were on hand to help distraught relatives make identification.
You're sure your husband isn't in any of the other places where bodies are being
held? No, Ranger.
He may be all right. Lots of men have been so busy helping others, he may be one of those.
Oh, if only he isn't here.
Let's hope he isn't. The embalmers are still working on more bodies over at McGar's garage. It's the only place handy. Keep your hopes up, but don't hope too much for a while.
I'll be all right.
Might as well start looking through this next row now there. Pretty bad cases. Recognize anything on this one?
No.
This?
No.
I'm sorry. I'm very sorry, ma'am. Are you sure?
That ring on his finger. I gave it to him a long time ago.
Yeah, I know. It isn't easy, but try and get a grip.
I'm all right, Ranger.
You better give me a name for the tag.
His name is... Vance. My husband, Vance Young.
Vance Young. The name burned in my mind like a branding iron. There was no time to ask her, and yet I had to ask. It was part of my job. I waited until we got out into the street. There's some information I have to get from you, Mrs. Young, about your husband.
All right.
Did he have a criminal record?
Yes.
Did you know we were looking for him? For a string of safecracking?
Oh, does that matter now? He's dead, isn't he?
Yes, I'm sorry, Mrs. Young. You'll find some men at the desks in that building across the way. They'll help you with funeral arrangements.
All right. Thank you very much.
Vance Young.
Jace! Hey, Jace!
Huh? Oh, hello, Kurtz.
Captain Simpson wants us.
Where is he?
The mobile unit.
Let's go.
I'll be glad when this assignment is over. I hope we never see another one like it.
Yeah, I've helped with 5 identifications today. You stand there with somebody and see their life fall apart because of a freak accident.
Woman who just left you, she finds somebody?
Yeah, her husband. Kurtz, it was Vance Young.
Vance Young? The knob knocker?
Yeah. Looks like the explosion ended his case for our files.
Don't you think we better check the body for prints and marks?
Oh, he got it too badly. She identified him by a ring.
Unidentified bodies give a knob knocker like Young a big chance to disappear.
I thought of that, too. Except for one thing. That woman's grief was real. She wasn't faking it. A week passed. A week of horror and nightmares. Till the fires in Texas City were controlled and stopped. Men with tight lips and grim courage started to rebuild the ruins. Most of us Rangers went back to regular duty in our regular areas. Then one day, while Bud Kurtz and I had just finished a routine job and were driving back to headquarters, a call came through via short wave.
KTXA to Unit 10. KTXA to Unit 10.
Unit 10 to KTXA. Go ahead, KTXA.
Unit 10, proceed immediately to Lansdowne, Texas, Arthur County. Safe of mercantile store burglarized there at 4 a.m. today. Crime reported by owner when store opened at 9:30 a.m. this date.
Any lead on responsible subject?
Subject unidentified but known to be one man working alone, according to information given by watchman. Watchman was overpowered, being treated Lansdowne Emergency Hospital.
Units 10 and 6 proceeding to Lansdowne will keep KTXA informed. Unit 10, 10-4.
Assignment authority, Captain Stinson. KTXA, Austin.
Lansdowne, about 40 miles, Jace.
Yeah.
Knob-knocking job, huh?
Yeah. At least, though, there's one safe specialist we can eliminate right from scratch on this one.
Who?
Vance Young.
Oh, yeah. I almost forgot about him. Dead men don't rob safes, do they?
We reached the Lansdowne Mercantile Store at 11:15, and Sheriff Joe Pastrone showed us through.
These back rooms are used for storage. He came in through the back, went through that door over there to the general office. That's where the safe is.
How'd he get into the building?
Forced the watchman to let him in. Watchman patrols this whole area, door shaker. Has keys to get into all the stores if he sees anything that looks funny.
And then he must have met the safecracker outside.
I guess so. Watchman was pretty dazed this morning. The doc is patching him up at the hospital. Deputy will drive him back here as soon as his head's fixed. Now, as you can see, been over everything for fingerprints.
You find any?
Sure, hundreds. They probably all belong to employees of the store.
Best bet is to check the prints on the safe first.
Already did that. Only 2 sets. Owner of the store and the bookkeeper.
Well, that won't tell us anything, Jace, unless one of them robbed the store.
Isn't likely. Better have a look at the safe now, Sheriff.
Sure thing. Our last office back here.
What make is the safe, Sheriff?
It's a Will's Atlas, new model.
That's a tough box, Jace. Steel and wrought iron plates and more alarm wires than a marionette show.
Yeah, but a good safecracker could divert the alarm circuit without tripping it. And the box is a cinch because he's got the wire holes to start working on.
Here we are.
You figured it, Jace. Back plate blown clean out.
Yeah, didn't even have to drill. Small nitro charges in the wire hose, and it was as good as having the combination.
Here's where he jumped the alarm circuit. Neat hookup, all right.
You take the pictures of all this, Sheriff?
Yeah, I can pick up a set of my office if you like.
Thanks.
Oh, Winky.
Howdy, Sheriff. Rangers?
I've been waiting for you. This is a watchman. How's your head?
Well, aspirin ain't gonna help it any, I'll tell you that. You gonna get the fella?
We'll be able to answer that better when the fingerprints are checked.
Fingerprints? He ain't gonna find any he left. He's wearing gloves.
I figure, Jace. Yeah. Tell me, Winky, would you recognize the man if you saw him again? Could you pick out his picture?
Yeah. If I had his picture took with a sack over his head, I could. That ain't likely.
You mean his face was covered?
Had a sack over his head, like I told you. Holes for the eyes. He ain't gonna catch him by no fingerprints or pictures. Maybe you ain't gonna catch him at all.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Winky. Sheriff, would you mind going down to your office for prints of the pictures of the scene here? I'd like them sent on to my headquarters for an M.O. check.
All right, sure. Take care of it right away.
What kind of check is an M.O. check, Ranger?
It means modus operandi, Winky. All criminals have definite methods and habits. They're repeated on each job they do. Forms a pattern.
Well, there's sure a pattern here, all right, Jace. Method of entry, where that circuit was jumped, sack mask, nitro charge in the wire holes.
Yeah, and it fits three men. Three safecrackers we've followed before.
Yeah, there's Bert Larkin. He's still doing time in Folsom for a job he pulled on the coast.
Yeah, and the other two are Jack Fontaine and Vance Young.
Yeah, but Young is dead. That leaves us Fontaine.
You mean you know who did it? Well, without nothing to tell you?
There's plenty to tell us. The modus operandi can be almost as good as a fingerprint or a signature.
I'll be winged. Maybe that fellow's going to pay off for slugging me after all. And for hurting my arm when he grabbed me in the alley there.
How'd he grab you? Show me. Go ahead, show me.
On you? Well, let's see. He whipped my arm up behind me like this. Then he jabbed a thumb up behind my ear like this. Sure hurts, don't it?
Sure does. Well, you can let go now.
Judo still fits Fontaine, Jace.
Yeah. Or Vance Young. He used it, too, on other jobs. When did he slug you?
After he made me open up the back door and let him in.
You mean he sneaked up on you before you could draw your gun?
Sneaked nothing. That's why I didn't get on to him at first. Heard him come walking through the alley toward me like he's taking a shortcut.
You heard him?
Yeah, it was dark, so I didn't see the mask until I lit a match. He asked for a light, see? Then he grabbed me. And he got me inside here and beat on me and kicked me.
Chase, that doesn't sound like Fontaine.
It wasn't Fontaine. He always sneaked a watchman from behind, and they never heard him. He always wore sneakers.
Well, then who?
Vance Young. That match trick is Vance Young's.
But Young is dead.
Maybe yes, maybe no. But I know one thing. I'm going to find out.
All right, that's the first portion of Tales of the Texas Rangers from September 9th, 1950 with Dead or Alive, starring Joel McRae. We'll have more after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Esmeralda. And thank you, Bill Curtis. You know what, Lisa? Hour two of program 202 in the WGN radio series. And we're here right every Saturday and Sunday nights, right?
Right.
Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, we're here.
Seems like it's more days. It seems like there's shorter time in between, right?
I know. We're here, and then a couple days later,
it seems like we're here again.
I don't know how
Saturday
that works.
And Sunday, and then we have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. There's no way.
I know. I don't understand.
It's no way. It seems like we're right back here.
It's because we're spending the whole week preparing for the weekend, and then all of a sudden, that's it.
Have you noticed I haven't been calling you that much lately and being like, call me, Lisa.
You know
Drama,
why?
Call me.
You know why?
Why?
Because you haven't been listening to Lisa.
Yeah, right. But yeah, Lisa's like my therapist, and I've not had to rely on. I haven't been on the couch lately.
Well,
you haven't had to.
Maybe you should be.
All right. Yeah. Well, we're were listening to Tales of the Texas Rangers. Now here's the thing, folks. We're gonna play the conclusion now of Tales of the Texas Rangers. Then we're gonna come back and reveal my favorite song from 1970 and Lisa's favorite song from 1970. And if you get it right, you're gonna win some Twilight Zone CDs. Make sure when you text in your guess that you put Carl's song or Lisa's song. The year is 1970. What's Lisa's favorite song? What's my favorite song?
And dig deep. That's all I can say. Dig
like her
deep.
Dimples.
Dig deep dig like my
deep
dimples.
Like those dimples there. 312-981-7200 is the number to text in. 312-981-7200. And take a shot. Maybe you'll win some Twilight Zone CD sets. But right now it's time for the conclusion to Tales of the Texas Rangers.
And now we continue with tonight's case, Dead or Alive, an authentic story from the files of the Texas Rangers.
I headed for Texas City and Galveston. Kurtz and I had no way to move until we knew for certain whether Vance Young was dead or alive. As we drove, I put through a request for headquarters to dig up some information. We were still on the road when KTXA came up with the answers.
KTXA to Unit 10. KTXA to Unit 10.
Unit 10 to KTXA. Go ahead, KTXA.
Have information you requested. Woman who identified body of Vance Young in Texas City gave name as Lillian Young, residing at 410 Harbor Lane, Galveston.
Deceased was wearing ring used in identification. Has subject Lillian Young claimed ring?
No claim has been filed yet. Ring still being held at property claims in Texas City.
Unit 10 also requested check on place where body identified as Vance Young was originally found.
Body was among those recovered from debris of Amalgamated Refinery Plant 7.
Unit 10 believes identification may have been falsified. Possibility Vance Young still alive. Units 10 and 6 continuing investigation. Maybe tied in with robbery in Landstone, Texas.
Proceed. Keep KTXA informed. Authority, Captain Stinson.
Unit 10, 10-4.
KTXA, Austin.
You get that address, Kurtz?
Yeah. 410 Harbor Lane, Galveston.
If we're right, she may have cleared out by now, but we've got to try it.
What do you want me to do?
I'll drop you at Texas City. Get that ring and check every living person who worked at Amalgamated. See if any of them remember that ring and the man who wore it.
Right.
I better call KTXA again and have that marriage record traced. Find out when and where that woman married Young, what her maiden name was, everything we can get.
We'll be in Texas City in a couple of minutes. I can start the check from there and bring the information to you where we meet.
The Harbor Lane address in Galveston. I found the rooming house Lillian and Vance Young had lived in, but I was too late. Lillian Young had checked out the day before. The landlord showed me the room.
They lived here. 5-6 months, all told.
You get to know the husband very well?
I tell you the truth, Ranger, I hardly ever saw him. Only time he ever left the place was at night. His wife said his eyes got hurt in the war or something. The sunlight bothered him.
When did you see him last? When they moved out?
No. He wasn't with her then. Last I saw him was, he went out about a week ago. Night of the big blast over at Texas City. Cracked the wall plaster here.
Are you sure you didn't see him after that?
Oh, I'm positive. I don't think he ever did come back. Didn't even hear no talking from the room. Just her. Crying an awful lot.
I see. She decided to leave kind of sudden?
Oh, like a jackrabbit hearing a hound dog. Left for work yesterday morning, came steaming back about an hour later. Give me the keys, pack up, and left.
Came back from work. You know where she worked?
Yeah. She was a waitress. The Bayshore Diner.
Bayshore Diner. Thanks.
So she up and quit on it just like that yesterday morning. Right smack in the middle of the breakfast rush, too. Because the postman come in and give her a special delivered letter.
Who was it from?
Who was it from? With 20 orders of ham and in the fire, I got time to read a mail? All I know is she leaves me the serving, the dishes, and the cleaning,
everything. Oh, stop beefing, Chuck. That little old gal had trouble.
Yeah, you should talk. All you got to do is drive one cab. You don't have the serving and the dishes and the cleaning and everything.
Why don't you find yourself a little old chaplain to hear your troubles and give me some coffee? Come on.
Okay, okay. Maybe you can tell a ranger more about Lil than I can. Hanging around her, making eyes at her all day. You took her out when she left here.
Is that right, driver? Did she leave here with you?
Well, she hired my cab, if that's what you mean.
Where'd you take her?
Well, I took her home. Waited while she packed some things, then rushed her to the bus depot. She said somebody in her family was sick and she had to go help them right away. I guess that's what the letter was about. I was sitting there having my breakfast like I always do, and I...
Yeah, I understand. But what about the bus depot? You know what bus she caught?
The northbound toward San Antone. Cut it mighty fine, too. Got there just about a minute before the bus pulled out. Would have made it a lot easier if she didn't make me come dashing back about a mile after we left here.
Back here to the diner?
No, back to the laundry down the street. Guess she had some stuff in there. Although, she didn't bring a bundle out with her. And then on top of that, she says she can't pay me. Not that I'd mind, except for the 10 extra blocks back to the laundry. I could have put the flag back up if she told me beforehand.
You say the laundry's right down the street?
Yeah, about half a block.
Thanks. I'll walk down.
Hey, Jace!
Hi, Kurtz.
Fellow at the rumor house told me you came down here.
Yeah, find out anything on that ring?
Plenty. A couple of men who worked at Amalgamated recognized it. Belonged to a plant man named Ralph Brenner.
Then it wasn't Young's.
No. I got that rundown on Young's wife. Her maiden name was Lillian Brenner. The guy she identified was her brother, not her husband.
Then that's why she was broken up. I knew that part wasn't an act. Come on.
Where are we going?
We're going into the laundry business.
Yeah, she was real upset because the things wasn't ready, but you know how it was, Ranger. We was almost 10 days behind because of Texas City. They was even using our delivery trucks for emergency over there. Some of our men left the job to help out.
Yeah, sure, but what did she leave here? Waitress uniforms?
Oh, lands, no. Diner up there has a regular uniform service. All she ever left here was men's shirts.
Probably Vance's shirts, Jace.
Yeah.
Real good shirts, too, Ranger. Kind you don't have to starch at all. And real fancy colors, too. Dude wouldn't want to be found dead in some of them.
Did she say she'd be back to pick them up?
Oh, no. She asked me to send them to her, COD. Said she needed the money she had on her for traveling. Shirts like that, you'd think her and a man was living off the top of the hog, but...
Sure. But did she give you an address?
Oh, yeah. I got it right here in this book. Right here. She wrote it down herself.
General Delivery, Lake Bluewater.
The shirts are ready now. I'm going to mail them out tonight when I leave.
We'll save you the trouble. Wrap them up, and we'll deliver them for you. Kurtz and I headed for Lake Bluewater, towing our horses in a trailer, ready to follow Vance Young no matter which way he moved. It was dark as we drove into the town. The clock on the courthouse was just striking 9.
Not many people on the streets, Jace. Looks like everything's closed up for the night except for the movie and the drugstore. Better find a place and turn in.
Yeah, I think we ought to drive out of town and camp someplace off the lakeshore. Walk the horses out for a while.
I thought we were going to plant that laundry bundle at the post office in the morning. Watch for a pickup.
We are.
Well, why not pasture the horses at the edge of town? Find accommodations right here.
If we stay in town overnight, it may start some talk. Talk drifts. We don't want to tip our hands.
I guess you're right.
Well, let's get out to the lake and find a campsite.
Funny thing about Young's wife remembering his shirts. Guess it's force of habit for a woman.
Strong thing, habit. His safe-cracking habits told us he was still alive. And now maybe her habits are going to make him wish he was dead again. We took the road for the lake, past the summer cottages skirting the shore on one side of it. Then as we rounded a curve and passed a house and a group of resort cabins, I spotted something.
Hey, Jace, what's the matter?
I saw something. Wait till I back up. Headlights picked it up as we came around this curve. There. Look at those.
All I see is the back of a few cabins, some wash on the line.
Look at those two shirts on the end of the line.
Look like a couple of rainbows, even in this light. Hey.
That's the kind of color scheme Vance Young goes in for. Shirts we have in the laundry bundle are just like those.
Lights on in a few of the cabins.
Yeah, I'm going to leave the car here while we have a look at those shirts. Horse trail will make too much of a racket if we drive in.
Yeah, no chance of being taken for tourists with that on the back. Better cut the motor and douse the headlights.
Yeah. What was the laundry mark on those shirts we've got?
410 mark. That was the number of their house in Galveston.
Come on. Let's see if we can find it on that line. And close the car doors easy.
Right, right.
Take one of them down so we can get a better look at it.
What's the matter?
Clothespin stuck. There, I got it now.
Hold it low to the ground. I'll cut my hand over the flashlight.
Good. There it is. 410. These belong to our boy, all right.
Quite a few cabins, Jase.
He's in one of them. That's all we have to know. Come on. Start with this end cabin and go right on down the line.
We better be ready for anything.
Here's the first stop.
Dark, Jase.
Yeah, have to feel your way around.
Doesn't seem to be anybody living here.
This one's empty. Now let's move.
All right, you.
What? Hey, put that flash out before I fire.
No. Well, Rangers, I'll put it out.
That's better. Who are you?
Name's Ed Bullock. I own these cabins. Just walking back from the boat dock with a couple of guests. Saw you sneaking in the dark. You looking for a place to stay?
No. We're looking for a couple named Young.
Oh, well, that's funny. It was Mr. Young who spotted your shadows. Hey, Mr. Young.
Was that Young just with you?
Yeah. Okay. Him and his wife was right behind me when I flashed light in here.
They spotted us, Jase?
Yeah. Come on.
Hey, to my boat. Somebody started my boat.
Is that the only boat you got down there?
Only one with a motor. There's a canoe.
We're not going to reach them, Jase.
They'll head across the lake. How far is it, Bullock?
A mile and a half.
Kurtz, grab your horse from the trailer. You can beat him around to the far side if you ride hard. When you get there, flash your light. That'll keep him from trying the shore over there.
Right. What about you?
I'm taking the canoe. And hurry.
We'll get him.
Ranger, I better go up back to the office. My wife...
You can faint later, Mr. Bullock. Right now, I need you.
Yeah, boy.
I'm going out in the canoe. Flash your light from this shore. They'll think I'm here and they won't dare land on either side. But make sure you don't turn the light on me in this canoe. All right, Bullock. Turn your light on as soon as I get out in the open water. I paddled the canoe toward the center of the lake. Kurtz beat the Youngs around to the opposite shore, and I could still hear their motor when I saw the beam of Kurtz's light. The Youngs saw it, too. The beam wasn't strong enough to reach them. I heard the boat in a turn, and the motor came back toward me for a moment. Then it went dead on the dark water.
What'd you stop the motor for, Vance?
Shut up. They're waiting for us on each shore. But their lights don't reach us.
Thanks, we gotta get out of here.
Will you shut up and let me think? There's a little wind, the boat will drift to the far end of the lake.
But that's so slow.
Well, what do you want me to do? I can't swim like you can.
Why can't you use the oars?
Because the oar lock squeaks, stupid. They'd hear them. Yeah, there's only two of them. They can't cover the whole shore.
Gee, Vance, it's so dark. And I... Hey, I hear something.
What?
Something in the water.
You're crazy. Can't you see the lights on the shore?
Well, Vance, I do hear something. I see it. It's a canoe.
What?
Don't move, Young. I'm coming into your boat.
What, you? I'll drain you with the sword.
Look out! The boat is
hitting me! Help! Help! Let go of me! Let go!
Oh. Hey, have you got any? He can't swim.
Where he's going, it won't matter. Grab on the canoe and kick for shore. I got a nice dry shirt waiting for him.
Convicted of robbing a safe in the mercantile store, Vance Young, on the basis of his previous record, was sentenced to life imprisonment at Huntsville.
This is Joel McRae. Many of our listeners, particularly in Texas, recall these cases we've been dramatizing, and some listeners have sent in questions about the Rangers. Yes, it's true. There are only 50 Texas Rangers. And to show you how busy these Rangers are, from 1946 to 1948, the Rangers handled nearly 17,000 cases. With Texas as big as it is, that means they cover about four times greater area per man than any other police officer in the world. Next week, we'll have another authentic story I believe you'll enjoy very much. Like the others, it's based on their official files, adding further glory to the Rangers. Hope you'll be listening. Good night.
Next week, Joel McRae in another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Joel McRae is currently seen starring in the MGM production Stars in My Crown. This story was transcribed and adapted by Joel Murcott, and the program was produced and directed by Stacy Keach. This is Hal Gibney speaking.
Three chimes mean good times on NBC.
That's Tales of the Texas Rangers with Dead or Alive from September 9th, 1950, starring Joel McRae, also in that cast, Gerald Moore. And, you know, Hal Gibney did the announcing on that, but Stacy Keats Sr. was the producer, director. He created the series as well. Hope you enjoyed Tales of the Texas Rangers. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercials. When we come back, we will reveal our two favorite songs from 1970. All right, we'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We play classic radio shows. We have trivia contests. We do all kinds of fun stuff. Every once in a while, we'll interview a celebrity. And for the last few shows, we've been seeing if our listeners can guess our favorite songs. And it's not an easy task, Lisa, because there are literally hundreds of songs from each year. And the other day, some of our listeners got it right. They knew what song you picked, and they guessed a couple people guessed my song.
Yep.
And you know what?
What?
Nobody got it right.
I know. I'm so sorry.
Not even one person. I'm really sorry.
We were so close.
Yeah.
One guy.
Yeah, or
was,
girl.
No, it was a guy.
Okay.
He was so darn close. He said the song. He had it right, but he said it was for me.
He had my song.
And it was actually yours. That was the closest that we came.
Yeah,
I'm
he
so
guessed
sorry.
My song, but said it was Lisa. So we can't bend the rules. But nobody got it.
I know. Maybe it's just tough.
Yeah, it's a tough trivia question. All right, well, let's start things off with Lisa's favorite song, and here it is.
I knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you in worn-out shoes, silver hair and ragged shirt and baggy pants, the old soft shoe. He jumped so high, jumped so high.
I gotta tell you, Lisa, I'm surprised.
I absolutely
I'm very surprised
love this
that
song.
This is it, your favorite
it,
song.
It of 1970.
Yeah,
yeah,
I know.
It sort of hits my heart.
Why? I mean, you're
you,
such a
you know, I know
rock
the story.
And roller. I don't
no,
know.
I'm not.
This is kind of like
I'm a softy,
pokey song.
No, you know what it is.
What?
I know the story behind the words, and I know the story behind the words, and it's a really neat story. This
what
is
the story? It's a guy
was
in jail or something?
This version is by Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. This came out in 1970.
Uh-huh.
And when the guy who wrote it, he was in jail when he wrote it, and he met a guy.
Named
and
Bojangles.
His nickname was Mr. Bojangles, and it's about him. And it's if you look at the words and you read the story behind it, it means more. And I don't know, you know.
I don't know this song. I like the Sammy Davis Jr. version of this
the
song.
The Bob Dylan version is the best, if you ask me.
Really?
Yeah.
But those were different years.
Yeah, that was later. But this is the 1970 version.
I just don't see this as Lisa's favorite. I don't know why. It
touches my heart.
When I think of the Bojangles song, I don't think of Lisa Wolf.
Really?
Yeah.
I kind of like some of those folksy songs.
I think of Lisa as a rock and roller, man.
Well, I have a lot
I
of
see
layers,
her as
Carl.
As a, you know, like, don't mess with me. I'm Lisa
really?
Wolf.
Yeah, I'm a lot softer than that. But you
really?
Keep thinking that.
Okay. Well, like the other day, it was you picked Touch Me by the Doors.
Yeah,
right?
I like that song, too.
And then
too.
Born to be Wild.
Yeah, but I like this kind, too. You know, I spent some time in New Orleans. I went to school there, and I have a soft spot for some, like, you know, bye-bye, Miss American Pie kind of songs, you know?
No.
Yeah, well, Piano Man. That's, like, as good as it gets.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I like Piano Man.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Lisa's favorite song from 1970.
It sure is.
Here's my favorite song from that same year.
Fell asleep and dreamed. I dreamed I was in a Hollywood movie, and that I was the star of the movie. This really blew my mind, the fact that me, an overfed, long-haired, leaping gnome, should be the star of a Hollywood movie.
Spill the Wine. Eric Burdon. I actually talked to Eric Burdon on the phone one time. I sent him a fan email years ago, and I said I'd love to interview you sometime. And he, his people got a hold of me, and I interviewed him.
How nice that was.
It was very cool. And he had a concert tour coming up. He's still touring.
Really?
Eric Burdon. Yeah. And this is Eric Burdon and War. He hooked up with War to do this song. Here's the... I'm not sure what Spill the Wine, Dig That Girl means, but... that's my favorite song, 1970. All right, so maybe next time we'll get Esmeralda and Roger to be part of this, and Shantae, and we'll see...
That's a great idea.
Yeah, we'll see what songs they like. Maybe it's 1971. Maybe we'll do that next Saturday.
Yeah. But, you know, you learn a little bit more about each other that way through the music.
Well, I love music. I just don't know that much about it. I was too busy collecting classic radio shows to, you know, listen to. I had an 8-track player in my car.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what car... what was your first car? Yeah, I think you
the
told
Pacer.
Me it was a Pacer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I had a Pacer.
So my first car...
AMC.
Yeah, my first car was a Fiat X19, but it was a piece of garbage.
Yeah.
I mean, it was...
Oh, mine was
was rusted all out, rusted. I don't think it had an 8-track player. I don't think it had anything. I just think it had a radio.
I think mine just had a radio, too.
And my Fiat X19 that I had is all rusted out. It was red, and it had... you know, the lights that pop up, you know, you press a button and your headlights pop up. Well, mine would, one would pop up. One would go up, you know, and then like 5 seconds later, the other would go, like about halfway up. So one would go up, no problem. The other one
Buy that car yourself?
Yeah. And I remember how much I paid for it, too.
Okay. I remember how much mine was.
I paid $2,000 for it. I think I got ripped off.
You know what my car was? And I remember it. It was
$1,500. $1,500 for your Pacer?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, yeah, I think the guy or girl took advantage of me.
Well, I don't know.
I was about 17.
You know what you get what you pay for.
Like 17 years old when I bought that car. But it was, and my friend Keith Hill was my best friend at the time. He was a mechanic. He was like in high school, took mechanics, you know.
A
mechanic class.
A mechanic class.
And I couldn't like do anything with the car, and it had all kinds of problems. And he used to keep it running for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you've come a long way. Now you've got a Yugo. Yeah. So you're moving up in the world.
And it doesn't have that much rust on it either. It's pretty good, actually. So anyway, that's that. Hope you enjoyed our little trivia contest.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, hour three. Thanks, Esmeralda. Thanks, Roger Badish. And this is the WGN Radio Theater. And on this hour, we're going to tune into a good comedy on the Halls of Ivy from 1950, starring real-life husband and wife, Ronald and Benita Coleman. It'll be a good show coming your way in this hour. And what else, Lisa? We have Cats Pride trivia. Let's
do
that right now.
Yeah.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cats Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming film The Bombing, which follows five people who fight their way through Japanese Air Force attacks during World War II. And the winner gets our final pair of tickets to see Hair, which is playing right now at the Mercury Theater in Chicago.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Butch Cooldridge in Pulp Fiction.
Sin's dead, baby.
All right. Butch Coolidge. Sorry. What did I say? Coolidge?
I don't know. You just usually
Butch
add one letter.
Coolidge. He played Butch Coolidge in Pulp Fiction. All right. Who is that great actor? I just get the letters transposed.
You're good at a lot of things.
Not naming
just not
names.
Just not names. Yeah, you have a little like mental block when it comes to
I'm
reading
mental,
names.
I'm mental, all right.
No, just like it's a little block.
Yeah.
You have
just
name
ask,
issues, Steve Ruxton.
Steve Ruxton, if I have any trouble saying names. 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
We're back. We got through that hurdle, and we're playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play it one more time.
Sin's dead, baby. Sin's dead.
And we have Bill on the line. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
How you doing?
Bill, I could get his
good.
Name right. Bill,
Bill, we got it.
I got Bill's name right.
Bill, who's that actor?
That's Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis is exactly right. I hope you are looking forward to seeing Hair. You've just won two tickets to the Rock musical. It is now playing at the Mercury Theater through September 17th. The Mercury Theater in Chicago does great shows. I go to all of their openings. And Hair is always a great time. Great music, Let the Sun Shine In, Good Morning Starshine, and Carl's favorite, Age of Aquarius.
I love the show.
So check it out at mercurytheaterchicago.com. And thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right, man. Have a good night. Okay, Bill is a big winner. Two tickets to see Hair. And somebody was texting us yesterday. He said that we were talking about shampoo, you know, different shampoo. I said Pantene or something like that.
Right. She had mentioned Pantene.
Do you remember Prel?
Of course,
what they
it's
would
green.
Put, they would
the
put
pearl.
A pearl in it.
Yeah,
remember that?
Of course.
They would put a pearl in
we
the
Prel.
We
used to have Prel. I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't like Prel.
And then I know. I think it was too harsh.
Right.
It was too
I
harsh on
so
here.
Too.
And then somebody texted in and said they used to have a thing where you could just spray it on your hair, or they still do.
No, that's like a dry shampoo. They're talking about. Psst.
I mean, what is that?
They still They still sell that. That's
you. Spray
There's
it.
Dry shampoo. Right now you can buy it at Target or Walgreens.
What is the deal
you know
with
what?
That?
Honestly, a lot of the young girls use that. I have three of them, so I'm
they
aware.
They just spray it and then you don't have to wash your hair?
Well, like
it cleans your hair?
I'm trying to tell you, like day two, when you don't feel like washing your hair the next day, you can spray it and it sort of just fluffs it up a little bit.
Are you
A lot of the girls use
here?
It. No, my daughters all have it.
Oh my.
It just sort of, you know, fluffs things up, gives it a little
fluffs
lift.
It up?
Yeah, it makes it smell nice, you know.
I have no clue.
You're definitely not a
no
girl.
No idea what that can possibly.
I don't use it personally, but we own it.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Okay.
And somebody said that they use it a lot or something like that, right?
That it, like, it's called Psst. Psst. But I don't think that particular one is necessarily still around, but there are others.
Well. I wonder if Ronald and Benita Coleman used Psst.
Right.
Think they did? Well, we'll find out by listening to this show.
I don't know if we will, but
Halls
okay.
of Ivy. This was a situation comedy show. Ronald and Benita Coleman starred in it. Came to NBC Radio in 1950. It was actually created, Lisa, by the same guy who co-created Fibber McGee and Molly, Don Quinn. And the Coleman, Ronald Coleman, played William Todd Hunter Hall, president of Ivy College, and his wife, Victoria, a former British musical comedy star, followed the interactions with students, friends, and college trustees. Willard Waterman, who would later play the great Gildersleeve on radio, was board member John Merriweather. Alan Reed, Fred Flintstone, was stuffy English teacher Professor Heathcliff. There was a TV series 1954 through 1955 as well. All right, so let's tune this in. This is The Halls of Ivy, June 14th, 1950. It's all about a stolen first edition. Here's Ronald and Benita Coleman as star of Halls of Ivy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. And now, The Halls of Ivy.
Love the halls of ivy that surround us here today.
Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. It's a quiet day, a day of contentment, if not fulfillment. Even the flies muffle their buzz in respect to the general repose. But judge not according to the appearance. In a dormitory, two students cramming for a final examination in calculus are engaged in a hot contest of canasta. A professor of philosophy has just scalded his throat with a boiling cup of tea. And in the tranquil home of Ivy's president, Dr. William Todd Hunter Hall, his wife, Victoria, erstwhile leading actress of the London stage, is pacing the floor as though waiting for a first night curtain.
Toddy, is that you?
Hello, darling. Am I late?
No, but I just couldn't wait for you to get back today.
Why today more than any other day?
Because I have something for you that I think you've wanted for a long time.
Ever been a moment that you haven't had everything I've wanted for a long time?
Here you are. For Dr. Hall, with the compliments of Mrs. Hall.
Oh?
Well, go on. Unwrap it.
First, I'd like to make a little speech about how my gratitude runneth over.
Do open it. Open it. Go on. Do open it.
Really? Yeah, it looks like it's... And it is a book. Vicky.
You're welcome, Toddy.
Oh, but Vicky, how in the world? John Donne.
Is it really the first edition? I wasn't too sure.
Yes, it's the quarto. Look. Here we are. Look, poems by J.D. with elegies on the author's death. London. Printed by M.F. for John Marriott and are to be sold at his shop in St. Dunstan's Churchyard in Fleet Street, 1633.
What you wanted?
Oh, Vicky, my angel. I've been searching for this slim little treasure for some 15 years. I've accumulated enough dust from bookshelves both sides of the Atlantic to fill up the Pacific. I've ransacked every seductive cellar and attic from the Hebrides to Halifax, and you... Where in the world did you find it?
I don't think that's a fair question.
Why not?
Don't you know, darling, that every woman must have a... At least one secret to be a woman.
It's a hangover book. I see. So it's none of my business. All right. Wheresoever, howsoever, and howsoever much, I will thankfully receive. Forgive me, my darling. I haven't even kissed you for it. I'm entirely and everlastingly indebted. Again. And again. And again.
Ooh, Toddy. All that for just one little book. For Christmas, I'll give you Dr. Elliot's 5-foot shelf.
Well, there's more where that came from, but... Vicky, wait. Wait. Look, where's the... Where's the poem I want, you know? It's somewhere near the... Here it is. Yeah, do you remember? The Good Morrow. I wonder, by my troth, what thou and I did till we loved. Were we not weaned to... Unquestionably someone who hates love and poetry. Well, well, we did dispose of him in short order. Excuse me, darling. Hello, Dr. Hall speaking.
Hello, Doctor. This is Merriweather.
Oh, it's nice to hear from you, Mr. Merriweather.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to bother you, but I thought you should know that Clarence Wellman's in a tizzy again.
Again? Well, that's a chronic condition, isn't it?
Well, it's nothing that concerns you, Doctor, but... Whenever there's trouble, leave it to Clarence to tie it on your front steps. His bomb sight is permanently focused on your doorknob.
What now?
His cousin, George Maple.
You and the rest of the board appointed him college librarian. I wash my hands of it with a good, strong soap.
Yeah, well, it really isn't Maple.
Well, then, who is it and what is it?
Wellman says that there's a criminal rampant on the campus.
In the first place, Mr. Wellman doesn't know the word rampant. And if he does, I'm sure he thinks they're trousers for lamb chops. Secondly, what has that got to do with Maypole? Or do you mean that Maypole is running rampant?
Well, it could be, Doctor. It could be. Well, it seems a brand new old book is missing from the library.
Oh.
According to Maple, as reported by Wellman, this book is worth a lot of money. College library got it with a new Breckenridge donation. Hasn't even been cataloged yet. Wellman's threatening to send for J. Edgar Hoover.
Mr. Merriweather, do you know the title?
Well, it hasn't got any. Just an old book of poems.
The name of the author?
He couldn't have thought much of his stuff. He just signed his initials, J.D. Did Rockefeller ever write any poetry? Are you still there, Doctor?
Yes. I'm here. And then again, I'm not quite sure.
Well, I don't see how Wellman can possibly pin this on you, but I just wanted to let you know. Don't let him worry you, Doctor.
Oh, I'm not worrying about Wellman.
Good.
Thanks. Thanks very much, Mr. Merriweather. Goodbye. Victoria, in the... First surge of excitement. I may have misunderstood you. You just brought me this book to look over. Was that it?
Well, don't be silly, darling. It's yours. I bought it just for you.
Yes, I understand. That is, I didn't misunderstand. You did buy this book?
Well, of course I bought it. I told you that. Are you bothered because I didn't tell you what I paid for it?
Well, it would help to know.
Well, then... I paid exactly 50 cents for it.
Ouch.
Well, what's the matter with that? Isn't it good?
Good. My dear Mrs. Hall, the last list price on this rare and precious volume was $1,450. Why, Vicky, that's the first time I ever heard you whistle.
For $1,450, I just learned how.
Where did you get this remarkable bargain?
At the campus bookshop on the remainder table.
Would you mind if I called them?
Not at all. Why should I?
Campus bookshop. Epsom speaking.
This is Dr. Hall.
Oh, good afternoon, Dr. Hall. May I help you?
I hope so. I'm calling in reference to a first edition of poems by John Donne.
Oh, my gosh. Pardon me, Dr. Hall, but that's all I've been hearing all day. Between Mr. Wellman and the Maypole, you think I stole that book. They've been on the phone every 5 minutes since noon. Now they're even threatening to search my shop.
I see. Then you've never had it in your store?
Oh, heavens, no. Not that I wouldn't have loved it for myself. And I know how much you've always wanted, Dr. Hall.
Yes, I have.
Oh, you must feel very badly about all this.
Yes, I do.
Well, for your sake, I hope they find the book.
For my sake? Oh, yes. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Remsen. Goodbye.
I did buy it there, Toddy, no matter what he said. I bought it there this morning.
Yes, of course you did, my dear.
Now, look, darling, I'm not a child, so you might just as well tell me what's going on. It all started with that telephone call from Mr. Merriweather, didn't it? Well, come on, Toddy, come on, I can take it.
By a remarkable coincidence, a rare book has disappeared from the Ivy Library.
Oh, a first edition of poems by John Donne, which I bought at the campus bookshop today, only they never had it?
That is approximately the situation. You must face the truth, Vicky. This is a hot book.
Well, does that make me an accessory after the fact or something?
If you are an accessory, my dear, you're the most indispensable one since the self-starter.
You would defend me, I know.
But you remember who sold you the book?
I don't know his name. It was a young boy. He must be new at the bookstore. I don't think I've ever seen him there before.
Well, by some agency, whether natural or supernatural, this book was transported from the library to the bookshop where you found it. And we'll have to return it at once. At once. And with an apologetic footnote to the good Dr. Dunn. Seek not to learn for whom the cash register tolls, Doctor. It tolls for thee.
Toddy, the binding's falling apart. We could take it back page by page.
No, darling. All or nothing. Just blindfold me, tie my hands and arms, tuck John Dunn under my elbow, and we'll be on our way.
Shall I untie you so you can answer the door, dear?
Oh, no, you remain seated, Mrs. Hall, just in case it's Wellman.
Well, I could swallow the evidence leaf by leaf.
$1,450 worth, A rich dish. Come in.
Good afternoon, Dr. Hall. I'd like to talk to Mrs. Hall for just a minute. It's terribly important.
Oh, you sound important, Mr.
I'm Tucker Mill, sir. I'm a freshman.
Oh, I'd never have guessed it. Come in, Tucker. Vicky, Mr. Tucker Mill's to see you.
Oh, why, William, this is the boy in the bookshop.
Please, Mrs. Hall, could I speak to you privately? I mean, personally, on business?
I would have to be obtuser than I am not to perceive and act upon a hint as broad as that.
Please excuse us, William.
I'll take a long stroll into my study. I want to look up a word, obtuser, as a comparative adjective.
All right, that's the first portion of The Halls of Ivy, June 14th, 1950, starring Ronald and Benita Coleman. We'll get back to it in just a few moments. And you know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
We'll be back here next week.
Yes.
And I thought we'd give our lineup for our listeners what we're going to be playing next Saturday and Sunday. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. And our Saturday is always different than our Sunday. We play six classic radio shows every weekend. And what do we have on the agenda?
Well, Saturday night we have The Mysterious Traveler, The Charlie McCarthy Show, a personal favorite, and Under Arrest.
Okay.
And Sunday it's Gunsmoke, Philo Vance Detective, and The Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show, a great
comedy.
Okay,
good. We have some mystery, some comedy, some detectives, some westerns.
Some intrigue.
Wow. All right. Good lineup next weekend.
Thanks,
so
Carl.
Check that out. Saturdays and Sundays, 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning. And I do want to remind everyone that we have a very fun website. It's called freeradioclassics.com. If you haven't signed up, and it's absolutely free, if you haven't signed up to freeradioclassics.com, then you're missing your email every Monday that I send out. I send out an email to everyone who has signed up, and in that email is an embedded classic radio show, a 30-minute show, unedited. It's as originally broadcast, digitally remastered. And then in the email, you also get a picture of whoever the star of that show is. It's a lot of fun. You might get Suspense one week, then Jack Benny the next week, Gunsmoke the next week, Dragnet. And it's just a way of thanking you for being a listener to this program. We've set this website up. Just go to freeradioclassics.com, put your name and your email address, hit send, and then you're going to get a confirmation email. Click that, and you're all signed up.
See, I was figuring by Monday, everybody would miss us because they spent so much time with us on Saturday night and Sunday night. By Monday, they were going to be missing us and longing for some more classic radio. And then, boom, in your inbox around 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, a little reminder.
Yeah, well,
there you go.
It's just a way to say thanks for listening to the program. And Lisa and I and Mike, we got together and we said, how can we thank our listeners besides just, you know, saying thank you? What can we give them?
Well, by Monday, they're just longing for more classic radio.
So we set this all up. And it's something for you. If you haven't signed up, then
check it out
is right.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, Lisa, that is our rejoin, as they call it.
That is our Bill Curtis rejoin.
It's our
rejoin.
Bill Curtis rejoin.
It's kind of special.
Yeah, and I'm starting to really get the hang of that piano. You hear that?
Yeah, you're
there?
Getting good. Music? All those lessons are paying off.
I know. I'm excited about next weekend because one of my favorite mystery shows is The Mysterious Traveler. I think that would work on television now. The premise, very interesting, right? There was a guy, kind of an all-knowing guy, and he was like the Whistler, same thing, sort of knew all that was going on, and he could read your mind type of thing. And he was just on a train, and people would get on the train. I often do this myself when I'm on the
I
the
do
L,
the same thing.
The L.
You going, take the L?
Well, yeah. I take it sometimes from Barrington to downtown. Sometimes, yeah.
You don't mean the L. You mean the train.
That's what I mean, the train.
You don't take the L from Barrington.
Well, the train.
No,
that's
L
what I
Barrington.
Meant. That's what I meant. Yeah. So I'll get on the train, and I'll look around, and I'll see people, and I'll be like, this is like The Mysterious Traveler. If I could read their mind.
I always kind of make up stories about everybody around me and what their relationships are and where they're going. Do you do that?
Right. Sometimes, like, you know what
like
I you know when I do that? When I'm taking my daughter shopping, let's say, and she wants to go into a girly shop because she's 14, so she wants to go into Ulta or one of these shops, and I'm tired already, so I want to sit down, I'll sit and I'll look around, I'll look at the people, and I'll go, okay, that person looks like an accountant, that person looks like a whatever, you know? And this person, I'll create stories about.
I do that.
Yeah, that's when I do that. But when I'm on the train, I think about The Mysterious Traveler. That's the whole premise, is a guy on a train, and he sort of sees someone on the train and tells a story about them, and it's always a murder mystery. And that's a great show. And that could work today on television. Somebody could create a TV show about that now.
Do it.
Yeah, no, I'm working on some other stuff. I got some other things I'm working on. But I always liked The Mysterious Traveler, Robert A. Arthur and David Kogan. I got to work with David Kogan. We did a mystery set together of all bunch of stuff, and he picked all the shows out and wrote the foreword. Great guy. I got to meet a lot of these people, but you know, it was the tail end. You know, I was getting into the classic radio world at a time when a lot of them were dying out. But I did interview about 200 or plus.
You know, there's only
people.
So many left.
Yeah,
it's, you know,
I had the great fortune of interviewing June Foray. Yeah, she just passed away. She was 99.
Yep.
And maybe we'll play some of that down the road.
Yeah, that would be
it's
nice.
Tough to play an interview because if I play an interview, then we have to not play one of the shows.
Show.
And I think people want to hear the shows.
Yeah.
So I'm a little kind of torn.
My inclination is to stick with the radio shows.
Yeah.
I think it's probably more interesting.
But like I have a great interview with Richard Crenna talking about playing Walter Denton on Our Miss Brooks. It'd be fun to play that and then play an Our Miss Brooks show.
Yeah, we can post those.
Yeah, maybe we should
do
that.
We can post them on the Facebook or something.
I hate to take up the time to play one of the shows. And speaking of that, let's get back to the conclusion now of the Halls of Ivy.
Mrs. Hall, do you remember you bought a book from me this morning?
Indeed, I do.
I'll give you a dollar for it.
Tucker, I only paid 50 cents. I wouldn't want to make a profit. It was a purchase, not an investment.
Will you take 50 cents, then?
It isn't mine to sell. I gave it to someone else.
Oh. Well, do you think you could get it back?
I doubt it.
Would you tell me who it is? Maybe I can make a deal for a dollar and a half.
Well, why are you so anxious to buy this book back, Tucker?
Oh, a friend of mine wants it.
Mm. Well, a friend of mine has it. A very dear friend.
Oh, there's got to be a way. There's just got to.
Well, if it means so much to you, perhaps if you explain to Dr. Hall.
Oh, that's all I need, the prez.
Dr. Hall may have his forbidding aspects, but he's really a rather wise and compassionate man. And besides, he's the one that has the book now.
Oh, I'm cooked. Gee, I didn't want to tell you, Mrs. Hall, but you're in awful trouble.
I am. I am.
And I got you into it. Do you know what that book was that you bought from me?
Yes. A first edition of poems by John Donne.
Why didn't you tell me? If you knew what it was, why did you let me sell it to you for only 50 cents? Gee, it's worth an awful lot more than you paid for it.
I know. I'm told it's worth almost $1,500.
What? Oh, brother. Who told you that?
Dr. Hall.
I'm dead.
Oh, Toddy, will you come in here, please?
Yes, darling.
A young man just died.
So I see. He's quivering with rigor mortis. To coin a medical novelty.
Dr. Hall, I didn't do a thing, but now I've got you all into a mess, and I wish I'd never taken that darn job.
Now, sit down. Vicky, would you scare up a snack for Tucker?
Sure, he looks a little weak. Vitamin's coming right up.
Now, go ahead, Tucker. What were you saying?
Well, I work for the campus bookshop. This morning they sent me to the library to pick up some duplicate books. You know, whenever the library gets a new shipment, they weed out the shelves and sell all the extras to the store, and we put them on the bargain table. Well, there was a whole pile of them in the library office today, so I just took them. Nobody can blame me for that, can they?
Oh, it's always possible to blame anybody for anything. That's why the index finger is slightly curved. It points round corners. When did you find out that you'd taken the John Donne along with the others?
Oh, when Mrs. Hall picked it out. Oh. With such a beat-up book, it didn't look worth 50 cents. And that's why I noticed it. Then when Mr. Empson started yelling about a valuable old book by John Donne missing from the library, I just ran here as fast as I could. I didn't want to make any trouble for Mrs. Hall.
Well, thank you. I can still make my entrances on cue. Here you are, boys. No tipping, please.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am. Vicky, Tucker here has just vividly described the peregrination of a particular book, which has put us all in a kind of a pickle.
Well, you can read it with relish, Doctor.
Well, it's all very simple, Tucker. Mr. Maypole will understand when we explain what happened.
The Maypole? He'll never understand. He hates me.
Oh, then it isn't so simple. Why does he hate you?
Well, I used to work for him at the library. One day I found a book he'd misplaced, and he never forgave me. Then when Professor Cameron asked him for a book, Maypole said it wasn't in the library, only I found it in the stacks. And I got fired for that, and I thought I was doing him a favor.
Well, when you help somebody like Maypole, you often expose him. Well, don't worry, Tucker. I'll return the book to the library myself. Maypole need never know you had anything to do with the matter.
Gee, you can't do that, Dr. Hall. I got you into this, and besides, the book's really yours now.
I think we should have that door removed in a 10-cent turnstile installed. I'll get it.
Tucker, I told you Dr. Hall would understand.
He's a great man, Mrs. Hall.
Oh, Mr. Wellman. Mr. Wellman!
Uh-oh.
You don't have to shout, Dr. Hall. May I come in?
Yes, of course, Mr. Wellman. Come in. Come in, Mr. Wellman!
Quick, Tucker, let's find a foxhole in the kitchen.
Mr. Wellman, I'm honored.
This is not a social call, Dr. Hall. I thought you'd be relieved to know that the thief has been found.
Oh? What did he steal?
Didn't Merriweather call you, or is it so unimportant that it has already slipped your mind, Dr. Hall? A rare volume was stolen from the library.
Oh, yes, the John Donne.
The thief is one of the students, Tucker Mills.
Well, what makes you
think he has a bad record. My cousin had to fire him from the library. He'd been working recently at the campus bookshop and was seen in Maypole's office this morning when the book disappeared. The police will soon pick him up.
Then I assume it's out of my hands. Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wellman, for taking the trouble to relieve my mind.
Your mind? Oh, yes. Goodbye, Dr. Hall.
Well, come out. Come out, wherever you are.
Has that Cossack gone, Toddy? Come on, Tucker. The coast's clear.
Weather still cloudy. Small storm ahead, I'm afraid.
Gee, Dr. Hall, I'm terribly sorry. I better give myself up and just tell the truth.
Oh, I believe in the truth, too, Tucker. But if Wellman and Maypole have their way, and they must have it to clear up Maypole's blunder,
You'd have your day in court, and I've no doubt the justice would eventually prevail. But in the meantime, what about your term papers? Your final examinations, you'll miss all of that. Who's going to make up for it? For all of truth, you'll still pay a penalty, and that would be very unfair.
Gee, Doctor, and besides that, I'm causing you an awful lot of trouble.
Oh, you weren't the cause, Tucker, but you could be the innocent victim. And you will be unless we find a way to silence Wellman and Maypole. For instance, if the missing book were to be found in the presence of witnesses, right on Maypole's desk where it was all along or should have been, well, then I think they'd be glad to let the matter drop.
Who's going to put it there?
I'll toss you for it.
Oh, you got a two-headed nickel. You always win. Not a Maypole in sight. We're in luck. Put the book on his desk. Quick.
It's done. Excelsior.
Never mind, dear. I'll keep looking for another one, and someday I'll find it. Maybe at an old rummage sale or at a cut-rate drugstore somewhere.
You know, Vicky, so often the end of a search is the beginning of disillusion. But I remember one occasion when it was the beginning of everything.
When was that?
Oh, not too many years ago, in London. I, usually so full of words, in an excess of adoration, sought another voice. I rushed you to the British Museum Library, found the volume I wanted, so that another might speak my heart for me. You remember the quiet of that library as I read to you from John Donne? I wonder by my troth what thou and I did. Till we love.
William, do you always part your hair on the right side?
Yes. Shall I start over?
And does the iris in your eyes always flash little sparks?
No. I don't think so.
I'm sorry, darling. Go on.
I wonder, by my troth, what thou and I did till we loved. Were we not weaned till then? But sucked on country pleasures childishly? Or snorted we in the Seven Sleepers' den? 'Twas so. But this all pleasure's fancies be. If ever any beauty I did see, which I desired and got, 'twas but a dream of thee. And now, good morrow to our waking souls, which watch not one another out of fear, for love, all love of other sights controls and makes one little room an everywhere.
Makes one little room an everywhere.
Excuse me, sir. If you two are going to make a commotion, you'll have to leave this library.
Oh, my good man, are you calling love a commotion?
Who is speaking of love, sir?
What else is there to speak of, sir? And if you insist on making a commotion about love...
Toddy, I'd love to make that kind of a commotion. If you could drag yourself back from wherever you are. And wherever it is, I'd like to be there, too.
You always are, my dear.
Dr. Hall. Mrs. Hall.
Oh, yes. Mr. Maypole.
Well, I'm sorry I wasn't here in my office to greet you. I left for a moment to check with the police department.
Oh, are you on probation for something, Mr. Maypole?
Of course not. You know what has happened?
Well, I've heard disturbing rumors that you lost a very valuable book from the Breckinridge collection.
Lost? Lost, indeed. Dr. Hall, it was stolen.
Of what was stolen, Mr. Maple?
A first edition of John Donne. I thought you knew.
John Donne? I saw it here a minute ago. No. Where was it? Here we are. You mean this?
What? What? Dr. Hall, where did you get this book?
Why, I just picked it up from your desk here.
It wasn't there. It couldn't have been. I tore this place apart. I know it wasn't there. In fact, I know who took it.
Couldn't you have made a mistake, Mr. Maypole?
I never make a mistake. I know who had this book.
Oh. Then you knew I had it.
You?
I bought it.
You?
I bought it for Dr. Hall for 50 cents.
50 cents? You couldn't have.
But I did. I bought it at the campus bookshop.
But how did it get to the campus bookshop? Well,
perhaps the answer is that you left a very valuable piece of merchandise lying on top of a pile of discards.
The boy stole it.
Now, why should a boy steal something worth almost $1,500 and sell it for 50 cents? Particularly when he didn't make a cent for himself.
I'll talk to dear Mr. Wellman about this.
Do. Do by all means. I hardly think that your cousin, who is at least a good businessman, would approve of such ineptitude.
Oh. This is a trick, Dr. Hall.
No, Mr. Maple. Just a full, if somewhat eccentric, circle. We should be grateful the circle is now completed. But I don't think the Board of Governors would find it very funny if they knew that the custodian of such valuable treasures as this didn't know a first edition from a duplicate.
Dr. Hall, in all my years, I've never been accused.
In all your years and in all the years to come, Mr. Maple, you should be everlastingly indebted to one person, my wife. If she hadn't bought this book, somebody else might have come along and bought it. And then where would you have been? Good afternoon, Mr. Maple.
Howdy, you are magnificent. Couldn't you switch our plans around a little? Why, you told Maple the real story. He didn't deserve to know the truth.
I couldn't help myself, darling. I am a lazy man, and I've always found the truth so much less effort than evasion. You know, sometimes I... Vicky.
What is it?
Something awful has happened. We've got to go back to the library.
But, Toddy, are you all right? What is it?
George Maple owes you 50 cents.
I was curious. I tasted it. Now I know why Schlitz is the largest selling beer in America. No wonder it's the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
And here again are Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Coleman's latest picture, Champagne for Caesar. We'll be seeing you next week at this time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. Friends, Look magazine, now on the newsstands, carries a wonderful story about Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman and the Halls of Ivy. It's called Ronald Coleman Becomes a College President. When you read it and see the interesting pictures, you'll know why the Colemans fit so convincingly the roles of Dr. Hall and the charming Vicky. That's Look magazine, on the stands now. Other players in our cast tonight were Willard Waterman, Herbert Butterfield, Rolf Sedan, Sidney Miller, and William Tracy. Tonight's script was written by Barbara and Milton Merlin and Don Quinn. The Halls of Ivy was created by Don Quinn, directed by Nat Wolf, and presented by the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Ken Carpenter speaking.
Around us here today, and we will not forget, though we be far.
Coming up, it's the Great Gildersleeve on NBC.
All right, I guess no NBC chimes there. That was The Halls of Ivy from June 14th, 1950. It was all about a stolen first edition. Ken Carpenter doing the announcing there. Hope you enjoyed that. You know, he was really good with the tool set, that Ken Carpenter.
I bet.
Yeah, he was good around the house. Something broke, you know? He could just fix it right
How
up.
How are you with that
Not
stuff?
Good.
I had a
at
feeling.
All. No, not good at all.
Do you have
all.
To hire someone, like a
yes.
handyman?
Yeah, I'm not good at that kind of stuff. All right.
All right.
There you have it.